Or
Alice or Dave, they don't mind if you sit on their lap either, because they're staff, that's what we're paid for.
Right.
To be furniture.
To be furniture. Oh.
Yeah.
Table.
I'm not saying that there is a blanket ban on sitting on my lap, but I just like to, you know who it's going to be
you
in
like
advance.
Be empowered.
Yeah. So.
Is there anyone you'd like to sit
on? No, it's all right. No. No, you're entirely free to sit on one another's lap or anybody else's. How's this go?
It goes.
Well, it's all a bit new because the guy who has been doing this bit is not doing this anymore. So
right.
But anyway, we don't have the normal microphone, so you'll have to speak up. We've just got a small dictaphone. It's all a bit Heath Robinson. But anyway, I was. This is quite different because normally it's an artist or something. This is kind of quite outside comfort zones. But it's interesting though.
For me too.
I was looking at your. I was looking at your website.
Yeah.
And I noticed there was. There's a statement on there about misdirection and Stanislavski.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Is that really?
Oh, and yeah. It was this idea, and it made me think that magic or doing a magic trick is founded on a lie. You're trying to get people to look over there when they should be looking here.
Right.
And it struck me that it was an interesting, it's not really a question, it's an interesting parallel, because that's what politicians want you to do.
Yeah.
We only have to think of the, this is a good day to bury bad news, is a kind of the classic modern example. And I was wondering if that the idea of lying and misdirection is something that you're kind of consciously aware of, and how that might fit in politically as well as
right.
formally.
Yeah. Well, there's honest lying and there's dishonest lying, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, go on, explain.
So I suppose I would say that I'm lying, but I'm lying in a way that everybody knows I'm lying, so it's an honest misdirection. And misdirection actually is not making people look where they wouldn't want to look. It's not about diverting people's attention.
Right.
It's about controlling people's attention towards where it's most interesting for them to look. So for magicians, actually, magicians would distinguish between diverting attention and misdirection, which is a theatrical means of controlling attention. And I suppose to that extent, it has some similarities with political spin. But it's done in a way in which, you know, its ends are not the same as the political ends. I suppose I have my political ends, but they are out there and open and honest, and everybody knows can see what my politics are, and the way in which I use magic to do that is just. A way of getting them interested, or hopefully getting people more interested in what I'm doing. And I do it because that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in sort of audience reactions. I'm interested in the theatrical element of it. I'm interested in the ups and downs of how things change through a theatrical narrative. So I don't know if that's answered the question.
No.
Except it wasn't a question.
It wasn't a question, so it doesn't happen.
So it has answered it in that case.
And Sharon, do you have anything?
Yes, this is a very stupid, banal question, but I want to say anyway, which is how did you get into this? Where did it come from? You have theatre background, performance background. It was nuts and bolts, really.
Okay, yeah. I got into it by through my training. I started doing magic when I was a kid, so I've always been interested in magic. Like a lot of magicians, many magicians start as, you know, with a magic set that they're given at the age of 10 or something. I think that was about when I started. So I started doing magic and I carried on doing magic, but then I also was interested in theatre. So magic is a good way of being able to create a theatrical narrative on your own without having to go and get a lot of other people. And of course ventriloquism then is another way of creating dialogues with other people without having to employ somebody else, so it's cheaper, you know.
Wait for them to turn up.
Yeah, or wait for them to turn up, or anything like that. So I was really, my central interest was in theatre. So I studied theatre at university, and I did, and then I worked with a theatre group. A political theatre group. We called ourselves Broadside Mobile Workers Theatre. We did sort of agitprop plays. And I sort of began incorporating the magic into some of the agitprop theatre stuff that we did. This was in the late 70s, 1980s. And then I left Broadside because... I was doing magic. I did the magic as just sort of straightforward magic tricks, as a sort of curtain raiser to some of the hard political stuff that we were doing. And I was criticised for it being too, not being enough politics in the magic tricks. And I argued that it was. It was contradictory to both mystify and demystify people at the same time. I was reorganised out of Broadside Mobile Workers Theatre, although I still have contact with some of the people who were in it. And then I thought maybe they were right. I should sort of try to incorporate more politics in. And that was about the time when Rock Against Racism was doing things, and people asked me to do stuff at rock gigs and things, and they'd seen me do magic, and I put more politics into my magic. And then the alternative cabaret movement started, and I got involved in that. So... and somewhere along the line, I also did a PhD on workers' theatre in the 1920s and 30s. So I was interested in the history of that sort of area as well. So now I do this, and I also teach theatre at Middlesex University. So is that it?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Any questions or any points?
I am
a member of the Magic Circle, yes.
Can you tell us anything about it?
I can tell you. What? I'll tell you.
No, he can't.
I can tell you about it. I can tell you. There are things. I'm not. The Magic Circle is. For a long time, I didn't join the Magic Circle because when I first started doing magic, it was a men-only club.
That was then my next question. Yeah. It's
not anymore. No, it's not. No, no, I didn't join until they changed the rules. There were some people in it. There were some men who were trying to change it from the inside, but I thought, no, I don't want to join any sort of men-only club at all. So, but then it, I think about 15 years ago or so, it allowed women in. So it's really a sort of hobby club and most magicians are actually amateur magicians. So people meet and talk about magic tricks. You have to do an audition. Well, I didn't do an audition because people had already seen me doing magic. But there are lecturers, a lot of them from America, coming here and doing lectures on particular aspects of magic, and it meets every Monday night, and there are other events that go on, and you are not supposed to reveal the secrets, but then why would you want to? So, but if somebody, the thing is, especially nowadays with the internet, anybody who really wants to find out how anything is done can do that if they want to. But that's not the most interesting thing about magic tricks, really. For me, it's the structure of the and the audience relationship that I'm interested in. It is sometimes annoying when things get so-called exposed, and some magicians get very upset about it. Doesn't worry me that much, because I think even if people do know how it's done, it still has the theatrical, dramatic sort of theatrical element which is appealing to people. And it does mean when things are exposed, it means that somebody has to find a new way of doing it, so it's always a good sort of boost to creativity. People finding new ways. A lot of the things that people say about magic, are to do with, people say it's all done by mirrors, because at one time a lot of magic tricks were done by mirrors, but nowadays very few of them are. But so because that basic principle was exposed, so people had to find new ways of doing some of those magic tricks, so that aids, or to use the mirror in a way that you can't work out how it's used. So, yes, so I'm a member of the Magic Circle. Yeah.
Okay, question.
Really quick, are you a member of the Socialist Party?
The Socialist Party. Awesome. No, I'm not a member of the Socialist.
Do you think socialism is viable?
I don't know. I think capitalism isn't viable. So I think there needs to be some sort of alternative.
Right.
I mean, I've been involved in political activity.
How do you define capitalism?
The prevailing economic system that we have at the moment, which is based on financial transactions and so on, I think in the long term, It is, as we see with the current banking crisis, financial crisis, I think it is unsustainable, and it is bringing all sorts of catastrophes, environmental and otherwise. So at one time it seemed very clear to socialists, or people who called themselves socialists, or whatever, that we just needed a revolution and everything could be changed in one go. And I think now, I think that is probably more difficult, and especially with the way in which international capitalism has organised itself. It is very, very difficult for opposition to be organised in an effective way. But, and some of the things that are happening now seem to work on a more ideological level rather than a direct, direct attack on the institutions of power, like the Occupy movement, which I think is a great sort of great thing that brings a lot of hope to people. But it's the beginning of a sort of ideological fight back. It's not, it's not a general strike or the sort of classic tools of capitalist fight back, socialist fight back that Marx would have thought was probably the way of doing things in the 19th century. But it may be that we will reach a point where that becomes inevitable.
Could I ask you, Ian, about who are your audiences?
Well, it's very varied. I mean, I perform to whoever will ask me, really, more or less. I mean, within reason. I mean, I was asked to perform for a Tory party conference once, but I didn't. So how I do a lot of
all those false calls.
I said I think this is a setup. No.
Yeah.
But I perform quite a lot for trade unions or for I mean, at one time I was performing a lot in sort of comedy clubs, in this sort of alternative variety, alternative cabaret sort of movement. That's become much less political than it was when I started out. I still do some gigs in those sorts of places, and it generally works very well. But I mean, I perform, you know, in theatres. I have long shows which I've done in theatres, Brecht on Magic, in which Bertolt Brecht explains his ideas about the theatre and how to how it guides me through the process of moving from bourgeois to socialist magic. So that's a long theatre show, so I've done that in theatres. And I did a show about Utopia as well. I mean, I went and performed at the Occupy at St. Paul's, in front of St. Paul's. I was with a group of people who walked into a bank at Tottenham Court Road and did an impromptu cabaret taking over the bank on a Saturday afternoon. So that was quite nice. There's a bail in the banks. So those sort of symbolic protests, I think, are quite useful as well.
So is this a constant process of evolving different acts and responding to different?
Yeah, I mean, a lot. It's a slower burn. I don't evolve stuff quick enough. I'm terrible. I ought to be doing something new and getting something.
Got a wardrobe full of, you know, props,
you know. Oh yeah, I have loads and loads of props, most of which, I mean, like most magicians, I sort of, you know, I like toys to play with, and I buy all these magic tricks, and a lot of them I just play with them or show them to friends, but I can't find any use for them in my act, but maybe one day they will, you know, come out. I'll suddenly think, oh yes, I could do that thing with a set of rings or whatever. But I ought to be doing something new, and I hope to have a new show in, say, April or May next year.
So is that sort of led by you looking for new directions, or as you said today, you perform whoever offers you the place, or are you thinking, well, actually that would be really challenging, that's an interesting area to go and.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, when I've made new shows in the past, it's to challenge myself, yeah, and to try to get a little bit more depth in what I'm doing and examine further ideas. Yeah.
Sorry, sir.
I was wondering, what would you feel about someone coming into this space, into this audience, and doing a similar act but with the polar opposite beliefs to yours?
Well, I think that's very common. Among magicians. In the Brecht on Magic show, I had a section in which I explain about my alter ego, who is a capitalist magician that makes, you know, does tricks with £1 million and things, and I get out. This speaking image of him, and it's Paul Daniels, and I make him disappear. But it's working.
That's more like a further satire.
Yeah, well, no, but I think most the ideology behind most, if you were to examine the ideology behind a lot of magic, is quite, you know, supporting the existing ideas about power and gender very much. I mean, if you look at the magician and his assistant, there are, you know, it's usually a strengthening of traditional gender roles. And often, you know, the symbols of magicians are symbols of the ruling class. And since the days of the 19th century magician Jean Robert Houdin, who developed magic for the middle and upper classes, really, and it's from there that the image of the magician as the representative of the ruling class comes. And I sort of play about with those images a bit. I still have the top hat in the in the act.
Yeah.
Hello.
Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
A lot of anti-capitalists.
Yeah.
I talk to. Especially around the cathedral, the Occupy movement and stuff. As I understand it, anyway, seems to be not associating capitalism too much with corporatism, which is what, in fact, they appear to be against.
Right.
Under this kind of banner of anti-capitalism. But personally, I mean, I don't think capitalism's wrong. I think the current system's wrong. Do you know what I mean? But I think it's more of the way capitalism has insidiously sort of gone into government and makes plans to change things. But do you not think there's any hope for capitalism to, like, make amends or whatever? Because it's a cracking system for, technological advancement and the quality of life. And it's either war, basically, or capitalism, which we owe most.
Well, we seem to get both, don't we? a lot of the time. And capitalism seems to often lead to war.
So are you a vehement anti-capitalist?
Sorry?
Are you...
Yeah, I would say I was anti-capitalist, but I'm willing to talk about it with people who support the idea. But among the people at Occupy, I know that there is a very big range of opinions and beliefs from people who are very sort of classic Marxist sort of analysis to people who have, spiritual beliefs which make them opposed to the banking system or whatever. From that point of view, it's a broad coalition of different views. I mean, I think, like you say, capitalism is a great system when it works for the people that it works for, but then even for those people, it at some point begins to fall apart.
Okay, Billy, I think what you said there was really interesting. I think that capitalism works for everyone. You can't see anything. None of us can see anything except our naked skin that isn't the result of capitalism right now. The table, the clothes, everything that we've got is a result of capitalism, okay? Somebody's made it, imported it, brought it into the country, retailed it, packaged it. The entire, everything that surrounds us, is the product of capitalism. Capitalism is the exchange of goods and services for money, and the money is what drives people to do it, just so they can afford to eat, live, buy, and have a quality of life. It's a concept which is neither good nor bad.
It's not just a concept. It's a relationship between.
You're in a publicly funded university.
Okay. Look at the buildings. Look at the floor. Is that from a publicly funded? That's from a company. Capitalism has built this structure of this building. Capitalism has built the structure of this building.
Eva. I have a question.
Somebody
else is asking a question.
Yeah. I think other people have.
Has no process.
Can I just say that the event is organised about Ian Saville as our guest, and I think you have very interesting things to say. But I think I would like Ian to speak and to answer questions because that's what he's here for. So we take advantage of that, and there are other discussions we will have and continue to have elsewhere, and arguments as we should do.
Yeah, that's a point of view that it's worth listening to.
I have a question. I hope it's not. Too easy. I'm interested in the relation you only mentioned it briefly with the theatre group.
Yeah.
And the magic. Do I imagine it like physical theatre? Because now a lot of theatre gets remade, so we take the script and we do something with it, and our bodies speak more than they used to.
Yeah.
Is it like that, but with comedy? Like, do you take like a Miller play or Shakespeare and turn it? I mean, it's possible, or do you write it?
Well, that's possible. But I mean, what I've done myself is developed from the beginning rather than taking a text and adapting it in, you know, post-dramatic theatre terms. I've developed my own. What I start with generally are physical actions. So it is when I do a magic trick, it starts from a pack of cards or a silk handkerchief, which is going to undergo some physical transformation. So it always starts from a physical point, and then I have to incorporate some conceptual framework in which to do that. So in that way, it is very much like a physical theatre process. I tend to use a lot of words, though.
Yeah.
So it becomes quite scripted. But my script is generally developed, it's often developed in conversation with an audience, so it's developed from the situation that I'm in. So I start off, and a lot of magicians do work that way, actually, you know, even sort of conventional magicians, Jeffrey Durham and those sort of people would start off by doing the trick and doing it lots of times in front of different audiences and finding bits where they have to say, they think, oh, well, I need to say something else there, or I need to. So that physical relationship with the audience creates the theatre, creates the theatrical situation. I have also written a whole script, which I've then performed, but within that, I start to develop new stuff, at various points. As I start performing it, it changes over time because I can do that, because I'm just one performer, whereas if I was, you know, a group, we'd have to either stick to the script or work on our improvisatory methods.
One last question and then we have to end, I think, so please.
I'm just curious, because you've mentioned it a couple of times already yourself, is that a lot of magic is very misogynistic. The culture of... I'm curious if there's any particular reasons why that genre has been like that. Is there historical reasons or anything that you know about?
I don't know. I think it's been associated with, you know, power and... magicians, in order to, it's an image of male power, I suppose, that underpins a lot of the ideas of magic. There are more and more women magicians doing stuff, but if you go to the magic circle, it's still overwhelmingly male. I suppose it's, you know, probably 90%. Men doing it. I don't know if it's something to do with the socialisation of children and the sort of toys that we give boys and girls. It may be that it's something to do with that as well. and hopefully that will change. I think it is slowly changing over time. It's a sort of geeky sort of thing, which, which, you know, was often, has often been associated with men as well. That sort of attitude to things. But I think that is changing as well in terms of, you know, the more women coming into those sort of, you know, geeky areas of, you know, computers and those sorts of things as well. But I don't know. I mean, it's a question I wonder about as well.
We've got to end here, and I'm going to end it with a marvellous magical trick. I'm going to make Ian disappear.
Right.
Into the pub.
Into the pub. Well,
and thank you again to Ian for such fun.
Thank you.
We look forward to seeing you at the end of January.